The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 5th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator, located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the first cellulosic ethanol plant will be constructed in Georgia. The battle over the Chicago Board of Trade merger continues in Chicago. And out of Washington, funds have been released for AgriAbility. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this edition of the Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, WILOAg.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to WILOAg.org and put the AM580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat at $5.91, up 19.5 cents today. September futures at $6.04 for the soft red, 21 higher. And December contract at $6.16, a settlement price there, up 19 cents. July corn futures 4 cents higher at $3.24. September's at $3.32.5, up 4, and December contract $3.42.5, up 4.5. July soybean futures up 4 cents at $8.54.5. The August contract at $8.64.25 higher, and November beans were up 4.25 at $8.86.5. Bean meal futures July at $2.32.90, up 30. July bean oil at $36.68, that's up 0.32 for the day. Feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange gained 62.5 cents for the August at $112.17.5. August live cattle at $90.70 a hundredweight, up 72.5 cents, and the October futures at $95.37.5 were up 62.5 for the day. July lean hog futures up $1.05 at $72.12.5. From the outside markets, August crude oil at $71.81 a barrel now, up just about 40 cents for the day, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 13,572. It is now down just about 5 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We missed you yesterday. Thanks for filling in for Dan today. I know he's traveling. And let's take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade. Wheat futures starting out strong today. What was the impetus behind the move higher?
Well, it's a foregone conclusion that we've had a horrible time of harvesting the hard red winter wheat in Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas. The general impression is the spring wheat is in good to excellent shape. We are nervous, of course, about some of the yield high variability in the soft wheat being raised in our own backyard. There's export business. The world supply of wheat is rather tight, and we are going into some of the critical growing conditions in the spring wheat growing area, particularly in Canada. Our general impression is that the marketplace is looking at a very tight wheat situation, and wheat prices are very strong.
There was some talk, at least maybe not on the squawk box, but at least on the wire services, that a good portion of what happened today was simply a technical reversal after hitting a 33% retracement off of the top end. And then people disappeared. The Chicago Board of Trade on the afternoon session, I don't know whether that had to do with the July 4th or they wanted to take a few more days off or what it might be, but that was one of the things that we were looking at on the wire service. Any of those things on your scope?
Well, the market was dynamic, and we, you know, my general impression was that three things happened. The weather forecasts were basically very kind for the 4th of July, which basically didn't materialize. There was some good rains in the, at least in one-third of Iowa, northern Illinois, and probably parts of southern Illinois. The weather forecast was extremely kind for next Tuesday, Wednesday as well. And we had marketing services that pushed the sell button. And, you know, basically market commentary that said if you have old crop corn, basically push it out the door. And basically profit-taking in wheat. Our general impression is that the weather forecast basically is tricky today. One camp is saying next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's excellent weather forecast. And Drew Lerner and some of the others are basically taking some of the rain out of the forecast to some extent on that Wednesday area. Some of the geographic areas that they're concerned about basically having reduced amount, of course, Minnesota, North, South Dakota, Nebraska, southern Iowa, Missouri, maybe parts of Illinois. And, of course, that's a big part of the Corn Belt. One meteorologist, you know, increased these, a couple of them increased the amounts and some of them actually decreased it. So it was an interesting forecast. And the marketplace, I think, went along a little bit with the short covering in the wheat, but also looked at the weather forecast. And that's why we saw this mild upward adjustment today from last Tuesday's major sell-off.
And that would have a great deal to do with pollination period as we enter that and proceed through a good portion of that across the Midwest. Tell me what you hear from producers and clientele, and I'd like to know about how they've recovered, if at all, or whether they're suffering still in parts of Indiana. And then when you get into the Western Corn Belt, how dry they're starting to get at this point.
Well, you know, the last question first, we do get the feeling that there is some dry areas that Sioux Falls and Sioux City area in western northwest Iowa did receive some good rain. Generally, I think everybody is rather upbeat, and the crop, the windshield tour, the crop just looks fantabulous in the Midwest. And the general impression is that, yes, we are on a quarter of a tank, and we do need more rainfall. And, of course, this is the reason why people, I think, are very excited, because the visual crop is just tremendous, you know, maybe even with the potential of being a bin buster, and we need the timely rainfall. On the other hand, it doesn't take much imagination to know. You know, I was just looking at the Dakotas, 7 million acres of corn, and then 8 million in Minnesota. That's 15 million acres of production. And that's still a major market factor, is those areas do slide into poor growing conditions here over the next 10 days to 2 weeks.
On the corn market, what do you see given the demand side from both the livestock sector, which probably should be increasing at these lower price levels, and then from the ethanol side? What do you see as kind of the bottom end of the marketplace as we go through harvest, if we have normal growing conditions?
The word I hear is $3, you know, that's a major slide, and then you have a floating scale of basis. A floating scale on the basis of somewhere between 30 and 60 under or 70 under, and depending on geographic conditions. So that's a pretty cheap price of corn.
And so you get corn down to 230 to what?
Well, you know,
on the cash side,
230 to 250 at the extreme low. And, yeah. You know, we would get very imaginative on how we get corn put away and stored. And And I would imagine on that kind of a flat price and that kind of a wide basis, you would see some very imaginative storage programs by the major grain companies.
I would think so. Then on the bean side, what do you see? Can beans rally in through the harvest season?
Well, one person called me and said, oh, my goodness, we got this big carryover of beans in August, paying off loans in August, and we've got, you know, a wide basis in beans. And, of course, you know, it doesn't also take too much imagination to see the bean situation being very tight. We know that a lot of the productive acres were taken out of production in Illinois and Iowa and Indiana. The good yielding areas, of course, you know, were taken out. And as a result of that, I think the yield per acre could be a little smaller. So after the last, you know, when we had Katrina, mm-hmm. when we had these surprise yield boosts in corn, the bean grower and the soybean processor, you know, it's hard to buy beans anymore. And the window of opportunity to buy a bean, in my opinion, is small. And any time there is a wide basis, either China or a soybean processor or a grain elevator operator probably needs to take advantage of it, because the two, you know, wide basis just doesn't last forever. And that's, you know, basically Cooley's Law, number one, watching it for almost 30 years now. You know, it's just this bean situation is extremely tight, and there's still not a lot of incentives to plant a lot more acres next year, in my opinion.
So am I right that you have just a slightly variant view of the bean market compared to others?
Worlds. And, I, you know, it's just like, you know, one of the things that I learned when I first showed up in the business is if wheat's bullish, you don't buy corn, you buy wheat. And if corn's bearish, you don't short beans. You know, so we are looking at a very strong fundamental outlook on soybeans, maybe a slightly bearish outlook on corn. And as a result of that, you have to basically be careful and not lump everything together.
Okay, we appreciate you being with us
today.
Have
a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, filling in today for Dan Zwicker, who is traveling. At the bottom of the hour, ag meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for an agricultural weather outlook. Our own Mike Sola says tonight across the two-state region in the southern part of Indiana, skies will be partly cloudy. There will be some lingering showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere, to be clear to partly cloudy, lows will range from 60 in northeastern Indiana to 68 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, Mike says, mostly sunny skies. A few widely scattered thunderstorms possible during the afternoon. Highs will range from 80 near Lake Michigan to 90 in the various central and southern locations. The extended forecast, hot and humid across the two states, will settle in for the weekend with just a slight chance for any rain until early next week, when the best chance for widespread rain will arrive over the area. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana, AM 580. In today's agricultural news, a California firm will break ground in Georgia this summer for the nation's first cellulosic ethanol biorefinery, one of six the Department of Energy chose to negotiate a grant award. Range Fuels hopes to break ground for a 100 million gallon per year plant to convert wood waste from Georgia forest into ethanol starting next year. It's currently negotiating up to a $76 million grant from the DOE, the Department of Energy, and recently received a building permit from the state. The plant would have an initial 20 million gallon capacity. Range Fuels CEO Mitch Mandich says the firm's conversion process eliminates expensive enzymes, using a thermochemical reaction instead.
It's heat, pressure, and steam that converts the wood chip to a synthesis gas. And from there, we take that synthesis gas and with a chemical catalyst, we convert it to alcohols, mainly ethanol.
Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman says the Range plant and others will bring the country closer to making widespread use of cellulosic ethanol a reality. Well, the battle over which exchange should merge with the Chicago Board of Trade continues. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange, otherwise known as the CME, and the Intercontinental Exchange both feel they present the best merger scenario. Merger offers by the Intercontinental have twice been rejected by the Chicago Board of Trade, but the Intercontinental is standing by its belief that its offer is superior and has given the CBOT until July the 12th to accept its latest proposal. Meanwhile, the CME says the Intercontinental continues to try to play the role of a spoiler in the CME-CBOT merger agreement and has offered nothing new in its proposal. The Merc officials say the fact remains that a combined mercantile exchange and board of trade offers great long-term value for the CBOT shareholders with lower risk while offering customers of both exchanges significant benefits that the ICE or the Intercontinental cannot match. And finally today, thousands of disabled farmers in 21 states will soon have access to education and assistance to continue farming. That's thanks to a $3.7 million fund provided by the USDA for agri-ability projects. These agri-ability projects enhance the quality of life for farmers with disabilities and their families and provide them with the tools they need to be successful. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus takes up the topic of global warming.
There's a new theory about global warming that is so important even a caveman can understand it. Of course, a caveman would worry more about ice ages, but let's assume for a moment that global warming concerned him too. If a caveman thought the Earth was warming up, he had two obvious theories to choose from. Perhaps it was due to an increasing use of fire. The other possibility was the big orange disk in the sky, the sun. Even to the caveman, this is no brainer. The fire he used for warmth and cooking was nothing compared to the heat of the sun. Fast forward to today, and our choices of theories to explain global warming are more numerous and complex, but not that totally different. The popular theory is that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases are warming the atmosphere. Carbon dioxide is formed in the burning of fossil fuels, among other things. Therefore, the cause is largely attributable to human activity. But a Danish scientist, Henrik Svensmark, thinks the sun is playing the major role in global warming. In the July 2007 Discover magazine, Svensmark, who is the director of the Center for Sun Climate Research at the Danish National Space Center in Copenhagen, blamed the sun for cosmic rays for altering cloud formation. His basic idea is that the sun can make the sky more or less cloudy. In the Discover interview, Svensmark said, "If the sun and the solar wind are very active, as they are right now, they will not allow so many cosmic rays to reach the Earth. Fewer cosmic rays mean fewer clouds will be formed. So there will be a warmer Earth." This doesn't mean that Svensmark completely dismisses greenhouse gases, because he doesn't. He just thinks that carbon dioxide emissions are affecting climate change much less than is popularly thought. And the climate models that are the root of the most dire predictions cannot model clouds, so they are really poor, in his opinion. Some of the harshest criticism of the Danish scientist's work seems to be coming out of the United Nations. An even-handed new book on climate change admitted that the effect of clouds is a complex and not perfectly understood. For agriculture and the rest of us, there is no escaping the debate over global climate change. Farmers are concerned about international environmental treaties, new regulations, added layers of bureaucracy, and their inevitable costs. A caveman could have shrugged the whole thing off, but we can't. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochka's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Time now to take our Thursday look at the cash grain market. Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Have a good 4th of July.
Yes, very good.
And me too. Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the marketplace. You know, as you take a look at the cash grain market, kind of interesting to watch the divergence in the corn price and the bean price. Of course, the corn's been on the way down. The beans have been on the way up. You think that can continue for a while?
Well, I don't think forever, no. And I think the wheat enters into that too. You know, wheat can't continue to stay at these levels, and corn down here, you know, at the $3 level on the cash side, I don't believe either. I don't know. It's going to be pretty interesting. I don't think the volatility for the summer is over yet by any means.
Yeah, would you think that the volatility would be to the upside on the corn market then?
Well, no, not necessarily. I think you're going to see it both ways. It wouldn't surprise me if you couldn't see, you know, some rebound as we move along and probably going down here. And we had talked, I think, last week on Commodity Week, this 340 level on the Dease corn was pretty important. We violated that on Tuesday there, but with the day before a holiday, we probably needed to confirm that, and we did close back up above that today. So that was a good sign, I think, today.
Mm-hmm. And then would you be a willing seller of those bushels that you really have to move at harvest time over the scale? What time would you be a willing seller of them ahead of schedule?
Well, I think you can look for, you know, we've probably been down here about 90 cents or so off the highs. You get back up a third of that or so, I think I'd definitely look at being a seller there, especially those bushels, like you say, that you have to move at harvest time.
Yeah, I was really only talking about the things that you couldn't store and you had to move it
right
at harvest time. What about for soybeans? What do you see there?
Well, we've actually kind of gotten a sell signal here today on the soybeans, and when we get those, we try to do incremental sales on a, you know, daily or every other day type basis. So we think that you should probably be looking at making some sales on the soybeans here again.
And to what kind of level on an incremental side? How far along do you think
that would
be?
Well, there again, the soybean basis is so poor, you have to deal with the stuff that you just, you know, need cash flow for by January or mm-hmm. that you have to sell at harvest. So I think that you want to be working towards getting, you know, 3/4, 80% of those bushels sold anyhow.
Okay, and your bids for the day are?
The cash corn is 303. Beans 804.
We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thanks.
And that's Bill Mayer. He's with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. It happens each and every Thursday afternoon.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Lawmakers are back in Springfield for a special session of the Illinois legislature. Governor Blagojevich called the session to try to break the impasse over a multi-billion dollar budget. The session will cost the state thousands of dollars a day, but the governor says it's worth the cost to increase pressure on lawmakers to reach a budget agreement. Many contend that it makes no sense for rank-and-file lawmakers to spend 7 days a week in Springfield when Blagojevich and legislative leaders aren't close to a budget deal yet. Urbana Congressman Tim Johnson is one of three Republican Illinois congressmen under pressure from a national anti-war group to change their stance on the war in Iraq. About 25 people held a protest today in Peoria in front of the office of another target, Congressman Ray LaHood. One protester who served in Iraq for a year and has since left active duty says he wants to see the troops come home as soon as possible. The group is also targeting its message at suburban Chicago Congressman Mark Kirk. Champaign police say they've been following leads in the 2006 murder of a Champaign couple as late as a week ago. Deputy Chief Troy Daniels says it's still possible the police can find the evidence to lead to an arrest in the murders of Jeremiah and Sue Hay. They were found dead in their Southwest Side home on July 4th of last year. Jurors in Chicago are back in deliberations today in the fraud and racketeering trial of former media mogul Conrad Black and his three co-defendants. All four face federal charges that accuse them of pocketing millions of dollars in non-compete payments from sales of Hollinger International newspapers. City officials in Gary are considering a ban on using handheld cell phones while driving. If that ordinance is passed, Gary would be one of the only Indiana communities with such a law. It's already on the books in Chicago. The ban would apply to all streets and highways within city limits. Officials at an emergency center in suburban Chicago are warning parents not to let their children play with deactivated cell phones. A four-year-old girl called 911 287 times last month from such a phone, and her mother says she didn't realize that a deactivated phone could still make emergency calls. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This little bit of news, too, for you. The Illinois State Executive Director of the Farm Service Agency, Bill Graff, reminds producers that today their crop acreage needs to be reported to their local farm service agency, not today, but by Monday, July the 16th. You need to have your FSA acreage numbers reported by the 16th of July. If you don't, it will cost you per farm, I think the charge is $46 for a late fee. Joining us now to take a look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather is Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You're not in your usual haunts in Massachusetts, but a bit north somewhere in the state of Maine, I believe,
yes,
today.
Yes, we're enjoying the weather up in Maine today, and I was out in the lake, and I said, you know, there's something I have to do this afternoon. What is it? And here it is.
Well, we appreciate you coming off the lake. We could have gotten by without that if you wanted to take a little vacation, but it's sure nice that you're here. Tell me about the weather forecast.
Okay, well, we have very normal summer weather across all just about all of the Midwest, and temperatures today are in the upper 80s, hitting 90 here and there as you get into downstate Illinois and a little bit farther to the west. But just a few degrees above normal, and it's going to stay that way today, tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. It's going to heat up a little bit as we get into the weekend, the end of the weekend especially. Sunday and Monday will probably be fairly hot, and I think we can look for the low 90s, maybe a few mid-90s then. As far as precipitation is concerned, just what we used to call popcorn showers, that is, the air is humid enough that if it heats up enough in a few spots, they'll get some scattered or isolated showers. The kind of showers that it never rains where it needs to, and it always rains where you don't want it to, but it's still, that's what we have to put up with. But nothing important on the whole picture here until we get later in the next week. I think we can look at a better chance of showers.
And the farmers will be wanting a better chance of showers. They're glad not to have the scorching heat, of course, during the pollination time, because that's pretty tough on that period for the corn. What kind of rainfall do you think we'll get after we get into next week?
I don't think we're going to see very much in the way of heavy rain, probably a half to an inch of rain. But the key thing I think you mentioned there is we're getting into pollination. The crop is silking now and will increase, and we don't see any real heat at the height of this pollination, and that is a key period for corn. If it gets through pollination, most of the potential disastrous types of conditions for corn are gone, because once it pollinates, it's a pretty sturdy crop, and we don't see any heat. Same pattern, ridge in the west, trough in the east. We warm up maybe a day or two, then cool air comes down again later next week. That's what's going to happen. And then it'll heat up again as we get into the following weekend and the early part of the following week. But I don't see any real heat to interrupt pollination.
They've had a tough time getting the hard red winter wheat crop out because of the rainfall. Can you tell me more about the Southwest?
Yeah, the Southwest, they're getting a little bit better weather in the western half of the Southern Plains wheat belt, and things will dry down slowly there. And I don't see much new precipitation for there, but it's still going on in eastern Kansas and eastern Texas. That rain is going to move eastward over into the Delta region, and they can probably use some rain there in Delta and in the southeastern states. So that's maybe a good move for it. But we're in the same pattern, and when you stay in the same pattern, you have to expect the same type of weather that you have been getting. They'll get a week's respite here. Maybe things can dry down enough for them, but I'm afraid they'll probably see some showers coming back at them again in about a week or 10 days.
When I checked earlier in the week on the Chinese crop, it appeared that the corn and the bean growing areas were doing quite well weather-wise. Any problems cropping up there?
No, it's been a little bit wet in the south. It was a slow advance to the monsoon. As it gets up into Manchuria, they could use a little bit more precipitation up in there, and that's soybean country as well as some corn up in there. But it looks very normal for North China crops. It's the southern areas that's been a little on the wet side.
You know, Pete, have fun getting back out on the lake. Are you fishing or just sunning?
Well, I'm trying to do a little fishing, and I'm a novice at it, so I think every one of your listeners could probably give me pointers on that.
All right. Thanks much. Have fun.
All right. Thanks.
Pete Leavitt joins us on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. That is today's closing market report. Tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. And don't forget, Commodity Week appears at 11:30 Central Time Saturday morning. Our guest this week, Doug Yoder of the Illinois Farm Bureau. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.